ambassador to hear the chief of Columbia's Continental Staff, William L. Shirer. We take you now to Berlin.
Hello, America. Hello, CBS. This is Berlin. The sands are running fast.
And hello. This is America, where the sands are also running fast. Let's check in at the front lines of the fight to save democracy.
I mean, this makes no sense to me economically and no sense politically. You think the people in Florida living off, you know, the accumulated wealth that they've done in the last 10 years are going to be all excited about, some plant that Trump saves in Erie, Pennsylvania for 300 jobs or 500 jobs? By the way, producing something that they could have brought cheaper without the tariffs beforehand.
The Trump tax, higher Trump prices, the plunging Trump stock market, mass Trump firings. This, friends, is MAGA's economic policy. And this is America. I'm Rachel Bitticoffer.
And I'm Aaron Murphy. I'm no economist, but Jeremy Siegel is. He's also a professor at Donald Trump's alma mater, the Wharton Business School. And this is his question.
What are we saying? We're going to bring 100,000 manufacturing jobs back to the United States and tank the stock market by $20 trillion?
Oh, welcome back, folks. Another roller coaster week. Some good news, some bad news, and some bad news is actually quite good news. Plus one really pissed off federal judge. Okay, Aaron, hit us with the headlines.
Yeah, Rachel, it's the good, the bad, and the ugly. And let's start there with the fact that the federal government will stay open for six more months. That's because Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer whipped up enough Democratic votes to avert a government shutdown. Despite Republican majorities, House Republicans ran out of time to move forward with Trump's big, beautiful spending bill and had to turn to a continuing resolution, or a CR, to keep the lights on. But the Senate needed 60 votes to prevent a shutdown, and Senator Schumer delivered them. Much of the left is furious. Here's House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries when asked by a reporter whether he stands by Schumer's leadership.
Have you lost confidence in him, the fact that you guys see this so differently?
Next question. Thanks. Thank you.
Okay, I know a lot of people are big mad about the CR, which is why I put out an emergency piece on the cycle over the weekend titled, Never Interrupt Your Enemy When He Is Making a Mistake. I wanted to explain why Schumer didn't force the government shutdown. And folks, I don't know if you know it, but it was yes on the CR or we got a shutdown. Not only would such a shutdown help not hurt Trump's efforts to consolidate power, it also would have saved Trump from the blame once his tariff policies tanked the economy, which has already started. I encourage you to go read the piece. It's on the stack, especially if your blood is still boiling. As they say, even a broke clock is right twice a day, and Schumer made the right move here, folks.
Yeah, I actually was chatting with a buddy of mine over the weekend about this, and one of the problems I had is, you know, the left just doesn't have the messaging capability to not own a shutdown, right? I mean,
yeah.
You saw the right wing frame this as the Schumer shutdown, and normally I would say, go for it. But in this case, I just don't trust especially Senate Democrats.
Yeah, and as I highlight in the piece, I mean, it's different when they shut the government down because we want the government to open. They don't care. Like, in fact, it'd be a blessing right now. If they could shut the government down, they can decide what is essential. They can refuse to reopen agencies like the Department of Education. It was actually no upside aside from the optics of finally putting up a fight. But there's a time when you've got to choose to lose a battle to win the war, and this is definitely one of them.
Despite an order from a federal judge to turn back, the Trump administration managed to deport two plane loads of what it says are Venezuelan gang members with no due process or evidence. You can kiss the writ of habeas corpus goodbye. Trump invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 to send more than 250 detainees to prison in El Salvador, a country known for its human rights violations.
Yeah, soon when journalists write about the U.S., it's going to say they were deported to America, a country known for human rights violations.
El Salvador used the opportunity to release a propaganda video showing each deportee in chains and shackles. The video shows them being piled one by one into a van, getting their heads shaved and driven away to what is known as one of the world's toughest prisons.
But here's the thing. Some of them are gang members, and I'm glad they're gone, and they should be gone. Like this Brown University professor who was friends with Hezbollah, okay? I'm sorry. But none of these guys ever received due process, so we can't even know for sure that they actually are gang members. That's why due process exists. One of these people would just be your average undocumented border crosser, especially because the Trump administration has been rounding up people just like that this whole time.
And hit them where it hurts. We detail at length the right-wing media ecosystem that helps normalize all of these illegal things. And you spotted a perfect example of what we're talking about on Fox News this week. Here's host Lawrence Jones asking border czar Tom Homan about defying the order from the federal judge. And listen to the answer here.
I wake up every morning loving my job because I work for the greatest president in the history of my life, and we're going to make this country safe again. I'm proud to be a part of this administration. We're not stopping. I don't care what the judges think. I don't care what the left thinks. We're coming.
Now, a journalist would push back on something like that. A right-wing media ecosystem, however, pushes forward. Here's how Fox News' Lawrence Jones responded.
Yeah. I just love seeing you going through these protesters, just crunching on the apple as their liberal tears just flew out the hallway. Tom Homan, thanks so much.
And lest anyone think these deportations only apply to nationals from, say, South America, federal agents arrested a green card holder from Germany at Boston's Logan Airport earlier this month. The government still hasn't said why it arrested Fabian Schmidt, a white guy. His mother tells New Hampshire Public Radio that Schmidt was, quote, violently interrogated, stripped, and put into a cold shower. He's now at a detention facility in Rhode Island. When they're rounding up people from Germany, you know this shit is serious.
No doubt, dude. Enhanced interrogation techniques. That's an oldie buddy goodie from the W. Bush era, isn't it?
Well, speaking of eras, Rachel, the Trump administration dropped Biden-era EPA lawsuits against chemical polluters along what is known as Cancer Alley. That's an 88-mile stretch of the Mississippi, home of two things, Trump's big chemical donors and poor black people, some of whom have lost entire families to various types of cancer.
Yeah, I have to say, I saw those interviews, and there was one woman who's had lost four of her sisters or mother to breast cancer. They took genetic testing, no genetic predisposition for cancer. If you want to know if America still has a race problem, all you have to do is look at the mortality rates of black folks, especially in the red states. Now to the good, or at least the not as bad. It's been a difficult week in court for the Trump administration and DOJ. On Thursday, a federal judge issued a scathing ruling right there from the bench today that the Office of Personnel Management improperly fired tens of thousands of civil servant employees on various types of probationary periods for what the judge called a sham. Federal Judge William Alsup used an example of a federal worker who received the highest performance marks only to be fired for so-called performance issues in a template letter from OPM. The judge also lambasted the Trump administration lawyer for failing to produce key officials to explain what they have done under oath. There's no recording allowed in these courtrooms, but let's take a listen to the transcript, courtesy of Rachel Maddow. And I have to say, that's what makes her show so uniquely valuable, is that she's like a dog with a bone with these court transcripts.
The reason OPM wanted to put this based on performance was, at least in part, in my judgment, a gimmick. Because the law always allows you to fire somebody for performance. And the judge says this. Now, what I'm about to say is not the legal basis for what I'm going to order today, but I just want to say it. He says, quote, "It is a sad day when our government would fire some good employee and say it was based on performance when they know good and well that's a lie. Excellent in all, fully," what was the phrase? I don't want to misstate it. Quote, "fully successful in every category, yet they terminate her based on her performance. That should not have been done in our country. It was a sham in order to avoid statutory requirements. It also happens to be that whenever you fire somebody based on performance, then they can't get unemployment insurance. So that makes it even worse, doesn't it? And then it makes it even worse because the next employer is going to say, well, have you ever been terminated based on performance? They're going to have to say yes to thousands of people."
So Judge Alsup, based in Northern California, ordered that all 24,000 federal workers fired by OPM's form letter in mid-February to be reinstated. The order applies to the employees who worked for the Defense Department, the VA, the Department of Agriculture, which oversees the Forest Service, the Energy and Treasury Departments, and the Interior Department, which oversees the National Park System. Again, here's MSNBC's Rachel Maddow reading a transcript from Judge Alsup's extraordinary order from the bench.
To repeat, this order holds that OPM has no authority whatsoever to direct, order, or require in any way that any agency fire any employee. Now, given the arguments and the facts in this case, namely that defendants have attempted to recast these directives as mere guidance, my order today, quote, further prohibits defendants from giving guidance as to whether any employee should be terminated. Any termination of agency's employees must be made by the agencies themselves, if made at all, and they must be made in conformity with the Civil Service Reform Act and the Reduction in Force Act and any other constitutional or statutory legal requirement.
If there is such a thing as a legal takedown, I am pretty sure that's what that was. That judge was not fucking around.
Yeah, Rachel, you know these judges are known for being by the book and very formal, but this was a case, just listening to these words from Judge Alsup, he was pissed, and he said so.
Yeah, he's been on the bench 50 years. He said he's never looked at bullshit like this. Well, he's going to be seeing a lot of bullshit like this. They all are.
I know we've been banging the drum about some people in the Trump regime wanting to simply ignore court rulings like this. You've discussed that a few episodes ago. And in response to this decision, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt tweeted out this, and I'm quoting here, "The executive branch cannot properly function if activist liberal judges can unilaterally block presidential actions over the entire country. If a federal district court judge wants executive powers, then they can try and run for president themselves. The American people overwhelmingly voted for President Trump's agenda, and it will be fully implemented." Ugh.
Ha. Well, between that tweet and Tom Homan's interview on Fox News and Caroline's press conference on Monday, someone clearly got to her, because take a listen to how her tone changed on this topic.
A few weeks ago in the Oval Office, the president said he will always abide by the courts. We heard what Tom Homan said earlier today. So I'm only asking, just to be clear for the American people, it is the administration's belief that they were that you feel like you were bound to comply by the judge's orders?
We are complying with the judge's orders.
We'll see, Caroline. We'll see. That's the new official position. And one can only hope it's true, but it is clear to me as I monitored the MAGA comms, what we're starting to see is a full court press to try to sway Republican public opinion into believing that judicial review somehow violates the constitutional order, even though it's the third leg of it. Judicial review, again, folks, is the ability of the courts to determine whether actions taken by the legislative or executive branches are legal in terms of federal statutes and in terms of constitutional issues. It's a key gear to the separation of power machinery, and it will be interesting to see, you know, what they're able to do. Okay, Aaron, let's talk about the court of public opinion for a second, actually. Specifically, some recent Quinnipiac polling, which falls into the bad news category for Donald Trump.
Sure does. The new national poll finds Trump is underwater. Again, that means that more people disapprove than approve of virtually every issue, and sinking. Job approval, 42%. Disapproval, 53%. That's down significantly from Quinnipiac's polls in January and February. Some other issues of note, just 40% of respondents had a favorable opinion of the reductions to the federal workforce, 55% disapprove, 49% disapprove of Trump's ethnic cleansing policy in Gaza. Only 37% approve of that, and just 36% and 37% respectively agree with Trump's trade war against Canada and Mexico. 60% disapprove of Elon Musk and Doge.
Yeah, friend of the show Larry Sabato, the gentleman from Virginia who founded the Crystal Ball, which is a really great election resource for you online. You can check it out if you don't know about it. Also pointed out that 60% of respondents in the Quinnipiac poll oppose eliminating the Department of Education. And 57% think unvaxxed kids should be barred from attending school.
But the big whammy here, a whopping 76% of respondents said the economy was either not good or poor. That's the worst outlook on the economy for this polling operation since May of 2023. And when pressed about his souring of what was a much stronger economy two long months ago, the president's message to us is, don't worry about it.
Mr. President, your comments the other day not ruling out a potential recession seemed to rattle the stock markets. The Commerce Secretary said there wouldn't be one.
I think this country is going to boom, just so you know.
Just specifically on the recession.
Yeah.
Do you think there will be a recession?
I don't see it at all. I think this country is going to boom. But as I said, I can do it the easy way or the hard way. The hard way to do it is exactly what I'm doing, but the results are going to be 20 times greater.
Mr. President, you asked.
And remember, Trump is always right. Right.
And what do you say to Americans?
If you look at what I've said over the last 10 years, Trump has been right all the time. This is the way to do it. We're going to make America great again.
He's always right. Don't worry about it.
He's always right. Right. What a dumb thing to say. More polling news. This week, an NBC survey finds that Trump is underwater for the first time ever on the economy. 54% disapprove. Notably, NBC says this is the first time it has ever seen Trump receive a majority negative view of his handling of the economy. I see these data as hope on the horizon. The American public is a sleeping giant, and we're in a race to see what will happen first, the broader public waking up or Trump's creation of the imperial presidency.
Yeah, again, this is why avoiding that shutdown was so critical. And I know it was so deeply unpopular, but we needed to keep our hands clean. So when the freak comes out, the public knows who to blame. Trump's honeymoon period is already drawing to an end. So it's about to get real for him.
So, Rachel, you are an expert in analyzing research and polling data like this. So what are the biggest takeaways?
I mean, number one, these questions are not being asked the way that they're tangible, they're abstract questions. Like, how do you think he's doing the immigration? It's not, how do you feel about mass deportations? How do you feel about deportations of so-and-so with explanations that there was no due process? The reason why you can't use questions like that is because it pushes respondents to a certain response, right? So it's hard to poll specifically the things that he's doing without framing them, because the honest frame is so terrible that it's hard to tell if you're pushing the respondent there or not. And that's why pollsters ask really generic questions. I mean, one great example of this, if you need to see what I'm talking about, is Data for Progress, which I realize is pretty popular amongst progressives, but they love to put questions to voters or to respondents in very favorable language that encourages the highest response or the lowest response. They do it all the time, but particularly on the issue of immigration. So, you know, when you explain to somebody the details of the asylum process and how somebody who comes across the border becomes legal by claiming asylum and all of this stuff, right? We had 25 minutes to give a lecture to each human being that doesn't support immigration and explain the intricacies of the system. We would get a better response, right? And so that's what a lot of their polling was about. And unfortunately, it really pushed, I think, Harris into a bad position. I think she needed to say, Joe Biden, the thing I would do different than Joe Biden is the border, right? And, her inability to do that without isolating her base, right, it was a critical moment and it cost her. Look, we said in the intro there was a mix of good and bad news this past week, but we do have something I consider to be very good news. As we mentioned, Republicans are holding town halls and meetings, and they're running into big, angry crowds and one very pissed off vet.
Thank you for that feedback.
I'm a veteran. To
be clear,
yeah, and that's just one of those angry veterans. We haven't seen a backlash like this since the time our first black president gave everyone health care, Rachel. That resulted in the emergence of the so-called Tea Party in 2009 and 10, and that energy ended up producing a net of 63 House seats for the Republican Party, just 2 years after they gave us the Great Recession.
Yeah, I wish you all could see this video.
Congress, do your job!
From the line trying to get into the event for a town hall held by Republican Representative Chuck Edwards. He's in North Carolina's 11th district. I think probably 1,000 people showed up for this town hall, but it only had seats for a couple of hundred. So you can't see the camera scan the line and get a sense of how many people showed up, but you can get a listen.
I was proud to vote recently for the House budget resolution, which provides the framework.
Yep.
And you wonder why folks don't want to do these town halls. That That framework provides for Congress to secure the border.
And all of this is on top of the angry town halls that we've covered previously on this show, and in addition to seeing all the protest activities in small town America, where such activism comes at a price with friends and neighbors and coworkers. That's because rural America will be decimated if President Trump's cuts are enacted, and some of them know it. And that's why here in Montana, Rachel, our senior senator, Steve Daines, refuses to meet with anybody in public. He loves to believe that he is out amongst the people, but he is scared and hiding.
Oh, well, I've got bad news for him, because there's a new sheriff in town at the DNC, and that sheriff's name is Ken Martin. And Ken Martin doesn't just have his, you know, six shooter. He's got a copy of Hit 'Em Where It Hurts. And what he's doing with that copy is he's holding 50 town halls across the country where these Republicans are hiding from their constituents to draw out and make sure people in that area hear how guileless and wimpy these people are. Can't even face their own voters as they steal their earned benefits. Well, friends, our time's up again. Until next time, I invite y'all to follow along in real time, right? You can follow along at Twitter, at Blue Sky. It's just at Rachel Bitticoffer, and I post a lot of content there. You know, make sure you check out the rest of the stuff on The Cycle and Substack. That's where I put the piece out this weekend about Schumer and the vote for closure. You can find me at thecycle@substack.com. A huge thank you, as always, to our subscribers, especially our paid subscribers. Without them, we can't make this show. So we encourage you, if you want to invest in independent media, please consider becoming a paid subscriber today.
Thanks also for sharing This Is America, and we'd appreciate you sharing our book too. That's Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. I've said it before and I'll say it again, it's more relevant than ever.
Let's leave today on a fiery note from Congressman John Larson of Connecticut. Like so many of us, Larson had it. He's done, dude. After a no-show by the world's richest weirdo during the congressional hearing on the Hill, John Larson, the final word is yours.
And that's why I do not understand why you would relegate this committee to no longer being of significance and resort to saying, you will do whatever Elon Musk and Donald Trump tell you to do. Where's the independence of the committee? Where's the legislature? We're an equal branch of government. And you start off with a blather, and yet we look at the empty seats here. Where's Elon Musk? I'm sure he's a genius and is a very credible person because of the wealth he's accumulated. But that does not put him above the law or the responsibility to come before this committee in this Congress. If he's so great, if these plans and all the fraud and abuse that he's found are so eminent, why isn't he here explaining it? You know why. Because he's out to privatize Social Security. He's been on television the last couple of days talking exactly about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and what he intends to do. Privatize it. The American people, some of them may have been born at night, but not last night.